Welcome back to Transformed. I am so excited you are here. This is our teaser to season two, which is coming in the new year. As many of us experienced in 2020 and 2021, things don't always go as planned or as expected. And so I have been recording new episodes for season two, but for lots of reasons that happened this year, the launch of it got delayed until January. And I recorded this very special episode with my mom as the guest to talk about holidays and rituals and celebrations. So we had to release it before the holidays. So you're getting this as a teaser. Go and subscribe so that you know when a new episode is launching. And thank you so much for your support of this podcast of Transformed. Season two is going to be even better than season one because I've learned a lot, folks. It's like going back into birth after you've already given birth once. There's an opportunity to do things differently, to learn and grow and enrich the experience in a different way. And so that is and has been informing me as I move into season two. So there's a lot of great stuff coming. For now, please join me in this really personal, very special episode about the holidays and about ceremony and ritual from the person who taught me the most about all of those things, my mom. And then please stay tuned at the end of the episode when I will share with you a little bit more about what's to come. For now, let's dive in, and I can't wait for you to hear this conversation with my most beloved mom. I'm very excited to share this episode with you today. It's a special one and a very personal one for me. I have invited my mom, Paula Rochelle, to join us today. And it's not just because she's my superhero and somebody who, I mean, it's making me teary even to speak of it, who has been my most profound cheerleader through my entire life. That, yes, that's one of the reasons I wanted to ask her to come on here, because she just is everything. And I wanted to share her with all of you because she has a very unique take on ritual and ceremony and making meaningful moments in a child's life. My sister and I were the recipients of that. And it was incredibly powerful for us to grow up in a home with a single mom who made meaningful moments throughout our day, our week, our month, the seasons, the yearly traditions. And I know that a lot of my listeners are young parents wondering, how the heck fuck do I do that? My mom and I already discussed that salty language runs very deep in our family lineage here. So we're going to let those fly today if we need to. And so I'm sharing her with you. And in this fall season, as we move toward the holidays, it's extra special. And so I want to welcome my mom. Mom, thank you for joining me today.
I'm honored to be invited. And I too am teary. Thank you for all the honor you give me.
Folks, we might just be teary through here, but we'll keep it together. So, Mom, with the fact that so many of my listeners are young parents and they're trying to figure out how do I bring meaningful moments into my family life. I want to know from you, you seem to weave meaningful moments, be they ritual or ceremony, throughout my upbringing. But I'd love to hear more of the origins of how some of that happened for you, maybe from your childhood or your upbringing. Like, how did this become something that mattered to you?
Well, my origins are in Montana and in the Mormon church. So we had rituals. We had ritual Sunday dinners, and they were very special. We had special December holidays, and they were very, very special. And then we had other annual holidays later. Like, it was very important for my father to visit the cemetery. So on what he called Decoration Day, which we now call Memorial Day, we would get in the car and drive 150 miles to the cemetery in Ephraim, Utah, where his ancestors are buried, and have a picnic on the cemetery with his relatives. And then in the summer, we would drive to a little town in Vernal, Utah, and be with my mother's family. And there would be family reunions there and all these cousins that, boy, oh boy, I don't remember now at all, but we had these annual gatherings, and they just brought real regularity and predictability into my life, which I really looked forward to. And we would have family reunions, both with my mother's family and then every couple of years with my father's family. So it just, that was there. And the Sunday dinners, and when we were little, birthday parties. And my mother really enjoyed gatherings. And I think that's part of the core of who I am, is the gathering people together. And, you know, whether it was for whatever occasion, the weddings were special. And I remember the weddings of my sisters. And so all of that was deeply in there. And then I went to a school in Billings that was affiliated with a college, and they did experimental things. So in sixth grade, Mr. Endres, my sixth grade teacher, put on a program for the whole school that was a May Day. Oh, he had no idea.
He had no idea what seed he planted in your sixth grade year, which we will get to that, right? Because May Day became something incredibly important in your life and subsequently in my life, and then subsequently in my children's lives because of that thread that Mr. Andrews?
Endres.
Okay. Endres. Wow. That's phenomenal. Yeah. I've grown up hearing stories of Sunday dinners with your parents, and then also the stories of what would happen when your dad, grandpa, would be gone from dinner, and how you, your sisters, and your mom would make it a party and play.
Yes, that was there too, when he would travel. Then we could have dinner then in the kitchen, because when he was there, it was dinner in the living room and in the dining room. And boy, you set the table just right, and the fork and the knife were just the way it was supposed to be, and your napkin in a ring. And so you just had... But boy, when he was gone, we got to have white bread and a party.
White bread. Okay. So these are some of your roots. So then flash forward, and you are now a pretty young single mom with a couple of daughters, and new parenthood is full on. And young parenthood as a single person is even probably, I mean, I don't know what that is like, but from what I've heard, it has another element of full-onness. And yet I remember you creating ceremony and celebration and gatherings and meaningful moments from a really young age. I'm thinking of the Easter parade.
Yes.
When I was super little. Tell us, how did you go from this connection in your upbringing that was based around your parents' traditions? Because one of the things people often talk about is how do you find what is true for you as a parent, rather than just recreating all of what it was that was your childhood. So you recreated some things. You took some elements from your upbringing, but then you morphed them. In part, the religious aspect was something that shifted for you. So what happened, and what did you do with me and my sister?
Well, when I gave up the beliefs of my religious origins, I didn't give up the values. And I really wanted to preserve some of those values, the values of really honoring life and celebrating the earth, which all of those holidays that I had grown up with were all really, you know, they adopted all the pagan holidays. And so I said, well, I still want to celebrate. I may not believe some of the stories, but that doesn't matter. I'm going to celebrate. So the first one was, you're right, the Easter parade. I tried to take what I knew about Easter and was a big deal and put together the Easter parade. And we did the Easter parade. Everybody dressed up. You've got a wagon. We had floats. And I got a minstrel, and you walked around the neighborhood.
I remember a lot of crepe paper streamers.
Yes.
That's what I remember. I mean, I was, what, probably 4 or 5 years old at most. And I remember the wagon with a lot of crepe paper streamers attached to it. And some musical instruments, yes, and some bonnets,
yes,
and dresses, and the neighborhood kids coming together. So you hired a minstrel, somebody who was an actual player of music,
yes,
to lead the parade of all these little kids.
Okay. And part of the gathering was you made your own hats. I think they were made out of streamers and paper plates and the staple gun.
Yes, I think they were. They were stapler and paper plates. There was some paint involved. I think there was definitely a lot of crepe paper.
So I wanted something that was fun, that was going to be memorable. Little did I know you would still remember that. I haven't heard that. I wanted it to be memorable. And to mark the beginning of spring. Mm-hmm. And that was wonderful, but it didn't quite capture what I wanted. So that was in 1975, just to put it in perspective.
Yes.
The next year we moved, we were at a new house, and I looked around and the backyard looked really good. And I said, why don't we wrap a maypole? You know, we had a tetherball base, and I had a pole that went in a closet, a wood pole that went in a closet, and I got a
lampshade
and a, yes, stapler and some crepe paper, and invited the 4 or 5 kids in the neighborhood. Well, we had to have an even number. And we wrapped a maypole around that closet pole and a lampshade.
Yep. Closet pole, lampshade in the base of a tether ball, which was just a tire with some concrete in it. Yep.
Yes. Yep. Which I still have.
Yes.
And And the parents came, and it was kind of just magical. We said, well, we're going to do this again. And so that was the origin of May Day, that for me marked the seasons without having the overlay of some religious beliefs that I could no longer really honor. I could mm-hmm. honor the earth. And mm-hmm. so that's what I did. And do something fun. So it needed to be fun. It needed to mark time. And it needed, you know, there was some history. Mm-hmm. You know, here's this history that goes back to my origins. And then when I studied a little bit, I found out it was a lot older than I was. So it's ancient.
Yes, yes, it's ancient. It goes back. It has roots in a few different cultures too, into Roman times and Celtic times. And yes, we have learned the origins of that particular holiday. And got to a point where my sister and I would be the ones who would tell the stories at different points as we grew up, because you would often start the celebration by telling a little bit of the story. And as many people know who listen to this podcast or who follow my work, story matters. And so one of the ways that you would bring meaning to that celebration is you would do a little bit of the research to find out what those stories were behind what it was we were doing and what the connection was and is to what we're living now. So it wasn't just speaking to the story then of Floralia and Beltane and some of the places where the origin of that particular holiday have its roots. You would pull it forward into, and now it's the coming of warmer weather, the changing of the seasons, the stepping forward, and then the symbolic. I remember so vividly the stories of the battle between winter and summer, and that winter would throw ice and snow, and summer would throw flowers and greenery, and summer would always triumph. That was part of the story that you would tell of the history of this. And so those stories of remembering, oh, summer triumphs, right? We are moving into this new season. And you would link that into what we were doing that very day, because we would have flowers everywhere and the decorating the top of the maypole with flowers and being outside and connecting with community around this celebration of nature and flowers and the warmer weather. And that was really, you know, memorable. And our community, our my friends growing up and your friends at that stage, all really came to be like, okay, what day is May Day this year? Like, what's happening? When are we dancing? And it became really important. And then I carried that on to my kids' preschools, the preschool that my kids went to and in my home for a time. And then I think each of the schools that my kids went to up until high school, I didn't do it at high school, but did it up until high school. We did a Mayfest of some sort to honor that celebration and connect. Part of what I love about May Day is also the symbolic weaving of the pole. So the connecting of each person having a ribbon connected to the top, and that as you move around and dance around the maypole, you're weaving in and out and in and out. And that creates a woven sheath around the pole that feels very symbolic about the coming together of community. And so the meaningful feeling of individuals coming together to create something lasting. And I say lasting because, I mean, you kept those previous woven sheaths from previous May Days looped throughout the backyard for years to come. So they certainly lasted. Yes. So these are some of the seasonal things. And I know we have lots that you did that were seasonal, but sometimes for parents, making a big deal of the seasonal rituals can feel daunting. And I don't want any of this to sound daunting, because you pretty much made rituals from crepe paper. from crepe paper, but also wove them into our daily lives. And at least as important as the annual traditions or the seasonal traditions were the smaller things that were rituals that really mattered. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of those, and I'll share some I remember, but one of the ones that it was meaningful to me was how we would start meals. So can you share a little bit about the story and the origins of that?
Sure. So you and your sister went to Utah to visit your dad's Mormon relatives and one summer, and you came home and you said, Mom, they start every meal with a prayer. Can we have a prayer?
And we were hungry. Humans are hungry for ritual.
Yes.
Absolutely. What's the phrase? We are ritualizing animals. We are ritual creatures.
Ritual, yeah. And meaning seeking. And so yes. I saw that and it was a moment of, and I think probably the first one we did is I probably said, well, let's do a toast. So that was my first iteration because we had glasses and I could do it quickly. But I also wanted to go beyond a toast. So I created a library of poetry books, and I put it right near the kitchen table. And we had a tradition, if your birthday was on an even day, it was your day to read the poem. And if your birthday was on an odd day, it was your day to read the poem. And so you knew, oh, it's the even day, I've got to get a poem. And you'd go quick looking through the poetry books, whether it was the little golden book of mothers,
yeah,
or Shel Silverstein or whoever, and you would go looking through these poetry books so you could start the meal. And so that became just a family tradition. The meal didn't start without a poem.
Yeah, we went through a lot of Where the Sidewalk Ends.
Yes.
And a lot of, and when we were younger, the Mother Goose and things of that sort. And on any given day, if either of us had no energy whatsoever for finding a poem or reciting one, we would do the old standby, which I can still to this day recite, which is, I eat my peas with honey. I've done it all my life. It makes the peas taste funny, but it keeps them on my knife.
That was, yeah.
That was the okay, I don't want to find one. Let me just do something. That was the one that Alyssa and I would do.
And yet it still marked the beginning of a meal. You knew it was the beginning. You knew what to expect. And there it was, you know.
Well, and I loved that too was okay. You had a way of making it okay for ritual to also be irreverent. That there were moments when it was like, yeah, right now we're going to hold the space for the ritual opening of our meal, but we're not going to take ourselves too seriously or make it arduous in any way. You let us say the honey on and peas poem if we needed to in a moment. We had a couple that were like that, but that's one that Alyssa and I to this day still talk about, remember. And so that also
gave the ability to have moods with our ritual. And I think that that's an important thing with raising kids is it's not about saying we have to be serious in this particular way every single time. It's we're going to hold this and we're going to hold the container for this opening and then move within the container as we feel fluid. And maybe that wasn't well thought out on your part. Maybe it was accidental. I don't know. But it worked to allow it to keep going. Now, when I was raising my kids, we sang a song at dinner before we would eat. Rather than we didn't do the poetry. So it morphed through the generations, but the holding the container for an opening mattered and worked for us. So that was I loved that.
Yeah.
And
having it structured so that you knew when it was your turn was also really nice because I didn't have to remind anybody. And that makes it just kind of come organically to what's next. And that kind of structure also served in other ways. I mean, we had the structure of Friday Night Rule.
God, do we have to talk about Friday Night Rule? I hated Friday Night Rule. I hated it. We all hated it. Maybe you didn't.
But you knew what to expect.
We did. So what is Friday Night Rule? Tell us about Friday Night Rule.
So Friday Night Rule was you could go play all you want all weekend once you had cleaned up your bedroom and your bathroom. Okay. And gotten all your stuff out of the living room, which we called community rule. So that was another little ritual. All I had to say was community rule. And you and your sister would go scampering through the community areas, pick up your stuff and deposit it. I don't know where, but out of the community area. And so it having that structure where you have code words really, really helped. Just remind people, just like birthday, odd or even, a structured statement. And it just makes things that turn out to be ritual. I don't know that they're celebrations, but they are a ritual.
I remember, by the way, Friday Night Rule also including doing some kind of community chore. So whether it was vacuuming the living room or sweeping the kitchen. It definitely involved cleaning toilets in bathrooms. And I've heard you share that part of that was for your mental health.
Oh, yes. Help.
Yeah.
Very much so, because I found that when you were out playing all weekend or having your friends in or whatever, and the house, you know, your bedrooms were a mess and your bathrooms were a mess, that I didn't do very well with that. So once you had cleaned up, I relaxed and played with, you know, had a playful attitude myself. And so it helped me. It was really for me. And I'm sorry it has left such a bad taste, but it was.
Yes, because we remember it. And I carried on, we have community cleanup in our, we didn't call it community rule, but it was community cleanup with my kids. Okay, y'all, community cleanup, boys, clean up your stuff, get it out of the community area. Because there is this likelihood of everybody's stuff, everybody's crap ending up on the coffee table, on the floor, in on the kitchen table, you know, all of that in a way that just starts to weigh down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we did community cleanup. Yep. And Friday Night Rule, the thing that you held the boundary that was something that had to happen. And that's part of what makes it the ritual, is that you said, this is what we do Friday night. we might not like it as the kids, but you held it as a container that this is what happens before you go and do your celebration or your weekend or whatever it is that you go play with the neighborhood kids or whatever was happening that particular weekend, and that it helped you and supported you. Yeah. So community cleanup, community rule, which was what it was called when I was growing up. Yep. And Friday night rule, poems around the table before dinner. And I also remember bedtime. Bedtime was something that was also, and I know that with a lot of parents, bedtime is a really nearly sacred time. Also, often incredibly challenging, especially with young kids. It can feel like there's just so much to do, and getting people to just go to sleep is not always an easy thing to do. But as I was growing up, that was a special time. We were privileged enough that my sister and I each had our own room, which isn't always the case, but we did have our own space. And you would come in to one or the other of our rooms and sit on our bed, and we would have private time with you where we would talk and tell you our stories from the day. And usually the other sister was in the other room going, "Mom, when are you coming to me?" I just remember having that, you know, "It's my turn" happening. What do you remember about bedtime?
So I remember that my motivation was for a special moment when you would feel like you had 100% of my attention. And that's how I did that, because the rest of the time I was doing stuff, you were doing stuff, you had, but this was a moment when you could have 100% of my attention. And I did it, I guess, ritually, because it was every night, especially when you were young. And it became a really, really special time, you know, to learn to listen and to learn to really respect you as an individual and your sister as an individual, where it didn't include, you weren't with each other. I got to have you. And so that's how that came out, was wanting you to feel really special as an individual. And this is the moment I could do it. So that's where that came from.
Well, I love did. And was that something that you read, or was that something just that was a desire that you had within yourself? Because I'm curious. I'm thinking about parents today, that there's there's a lot of pressure to do parenting right. And I'm going to put that in air quotes, right? Do parenting right. There's this huge amount of pressure to do so much and to research everything and to show up for their kids in exactly the right way. But you were parenting in a time when there was no internet. So were you reading a lot of books, or was this coming from within yourself, or what? I want to see if there's a way to take something from what you're sharing that can depressurize for parents today. Like, what do they need to hear?
Well, one of the influences for me was going to an observation nursery school, and I was expected to observe and listen to what you were doing and then write it down. Well, that began a practice of really careful paying attention, not only to you, but to me, what was going on in me as I observed. And that reflection then started a practice of what would I want? And so I would say, well, I would want to feel special. I would want to have the attention of my parent. And so I began that practice. And I think we also had a practice when you were like preteen and maybe early teens of you got a special day with me after school and your sister would go home and I would then have from 3 o'clock till 8 o'clock with just you. Where are we going out for dinner? What are we going to do tonight? So that really comes from my own needs and wants to feel special. So it just arose. Mm-hmm. It just arose and I paid attention. So that's part of what needs to happen. Pay attention, mm-hmm. You know, and that's what I did. And another ritual that we had that I paid attention to was, you know, Sunday morning music. Okay.
Sunday mornings were a time for many families that are very ritual based, that there's a time of a coming together as a family and an opportunity to maybe go to church or to some, you know, if in certain faiths, that's on Sunday. In other faiths, it's different days, but for many, it's on Sunday. And even the weekend for some families has kind of that open opportunity for something special to be acknowledged as a weekly tradition. Now, you were a single mom who was no longer engaged in an organized church religion, but that still mattered to you.
Yes. Okay. And I wanted to continue the tradition of inspiring, having a moment that something inspired. I mean, we did the poems and you know, peas on your knife. Well, that's sort of inspiring, but
there were some that were inspiring, Mom. That was just one that I'm remembering. Yes.
But to want to have something inspiring. So my sister introduced me to the Oak Ridge Boys, and I heard some of their music as just being really inspiring to me. You know, dig a little deeper in the well. If you want a good, cool drink of water, you got to dig a little deeper in the well. Well, hey, that sounds really inspiring to me. So I bought several records, and Sunday morning before you were up, a stack of those records would be playing, and that's what you woke up to. It lifted my spirits. It made me laugh. It made me dance. And I hope that Sunday mornings were a little different than every other day of the week.
They were. You also made popovers, which we loved.
Popovers.
And so we would wake up to, I mean, it was simple. That's part of what I feel like I grew up in a home with a lot of rich rituals, and yet so many of them upon reflection were super simple. Super simple, not elaborate. Sunday morning ritual was a stack of Oak Ridge Boy records on the turntable, plopping down one after the other, going for a couple of hours. I can still sing every word of probably four of their albums, both sides. And you'd make popovers, and we would wake up to the sound of the music and drag our butts out of bed to popovers at some point late morning and sit together, the three of us, and eat our popovers and listen to the Oak Ridge Boys and just have that be a moment in our week that marked the end of the week. Yeah. And that's, yeah.
And so that's another marking of time. So mark the seasons, mark the week, mark the day, and the holidays. And you're marking time in space in the natural world for me. Other people can have other meanings to it, but that was the meaning it had to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And that I'm just thinking about how simple so much of what you did really actually was, and how profoundly ingrained in me it was and has been, to the point where I now work with ritual and things of and storytelling. And And how much we think about some of the memes that go around parenting are things like, you know, car seats in the 70s. Well, car seats in the 70s were a non-thing. And if they were, they were actually just like this little basket that actually looked more like an ejection seat in the case of actually something happening. And so it's like the piece of it would be so much easier to parent in some ways back in the 70s when there wasn't so much pressure to get it right. And as our understanding of car safety, for example, just to keep on that one, has elevated, I mean, it's even more detailed now than even when I was raising kids in car seats, how long somebody stays in a car seat. So there's a lot of this pressure to get it right and to know how to do it right. But when we're talking about things like ritual, it doesn't have to be elaborate. And yet it matters. So can you tell me a little bit more about what you know now and maybe what you know, I know that you did read one article early on in your parenting journey that maybe you can share about. And then you've also continued your research around ceremony and meaning making. So can you connect a thread for us about what it is that ritual and ceremony and celebration, why that makes a difference?
So while my internal intuitive sense was just to do this, there was a little bit of doubt, self-doubt. I'm really good at that. But then I read an article that said children of divorce do better when rituals and celebrations anchor their lives and their years. Whoa. Okay, there was the study to support my inclinations, and it just freed me to do what I want to do, what I was already doing. I didn't have to justify it. I didn't have to doubt it. I went ahead and I did it. And since then, yes, rituals and ceremonies have become important in my life, and sharing them has become important as well. And they just, as you say, they just come organically. You know, the ritual that we have of one person speaking at a time, at a dinner, at one Saturnalia dinner, which was our holiday in December, instead of whatever the other holidays are, we picked Saturnalia. And the question was, what day are we going to have Saturnalia this year, just to avoid the usual December 25th holiday? It's got roots in early times when it was celebrating the winter solstice. But anyway, so we had this dinner, and it was one conversation. So everybody spent most of the time listening. And it wasn't listening so I could respond to what you had to say. It was listen to deeply just listen and hear what you had to say. There was one question, one focus, no crosstalk. And this became a real tradition in our holidays. I mean, we just celebrated one of your son's birthdays. And that tradition carried over into his birthday also. So I loved just focusing on him. Tell me your stories. And having a question that would bring out some stories. And that question didn't come from just anywhere. I mean, I thought about the question I asked him so that, you know, I could see what would emerge. So looking for what matters to somebody and what gives their life meaning is the question to ask when you want to have a deep, meaningful conversation that might go beyond small talk, that might make a moment really meaningful. And somehow I don't know how I developed that skill. Lots of
well,
lots of practice.
It's a lot of practice, but the tradition of having only one person speaking and going around a table, like at Saturnalia, at Thanksgiving, at a birthday, at different times, where there's a question posed and then each person gets an opportunity to speak, had a lot of egalitarian purpose. It felt that your voice and my voice had equal importance and that we could go around and talk. And I know that some of that has roots in having a dominant personality in our space and your desire to find a way to make that dominant voice have equal weighting to everybody else.
Yes. Yes. And it kind of rises out of some of the feminist principles. So I really like round tables. Everyone is more or less equal. And that, so it speaks to what you are talking about and not giving more weight to one or another. And that was not my family of origin at all. My poor father had four daughters and he really, really wanted a son. But the best he could do was to be the patriarch. And by the 70s, I wasn't having much of that. So I created my own thing, just again, out of my own need to have things be more that reflected my values. So it helped to really know what my values were, you know, egalitarian. That's a value. Respect didn't matter if you were 4 years old or 44.
Yeah. And that piece is really different from what happens in a lot of families is that element of if you're four, you get an opportunity to speak. And if you're 104, you get an opportunity to speak. And everybody else also has an opportunity to listen. And even the four-year-old learns some listening, in part through the modeling. And that you did that not just at family dinners that included your dad, but also at meals with just the three of us. And I really took a piece from that and used that in my own family with my boys, where we would go around the table after we would do our opening song. We would ask the question, highs, lows, service, and gratitude. And each person got an opportunity to speak to their highs of their day, their lows of their day, because I think it's important to give voice also to what isn't always just ethereal and great. I like the depths. And so sometimes the great learnings in a day comes from the lows. Service, meaning how did I help others today? And gratitude, where what am I grateful for? What from my day was something that I want to be thankful for? And each person had an opportunity to respond without crosstalk. Right? Without and crosstalk. So no one interrupting them when they're speaking. And that those four questions, highs, lows, service, and gratitude, was something that I learned in my community with my children. But the practice was something I learned from you and put into daily practice with our family in a way that our kids really learned how to listen to one another and to make space for each other, which is pretty hard to do. And as you know, there are three of us in my family who take up space quite easily. No problem. Give me the mic. I've got one right in front of me right now. I've got no problem taking up space. And that is true for one of my sons and for my husband, but it isn't true for both of my sons. And so creating space where he had a space to be, to take up space, where he got an opportunity to speak and practice. And the three of us all had the practice of listening. Well, all four of us had the practice of listening, but it comes very naturally to one of my kids. And so it was that opportunity that continues in many ways to this day when we are together. And it feels like it has its origins at our holiday tables with you and Grandpa.
Well, and I love the way your questions embed your values. What am I grateful for? And how have I helped? That's embedding some really important values. So in thinking about, if I had thought more deeply, I might have come up with those, but you carried it even deeper. And that's really wonderful. There's the values. What do you value in what you focus on?
Well, and putting in the lows feels really important to me too, because it's so easy to do a practice of, I mean, not so easy, but I know many families who do a gratitude reflection around a table. But for me, that wasn't the only thing I wanted to be doing. And some people will do a tell me what was the highlight of your day, like a highlights reel. But for me, there was something that I wanted my kids to know that they could have bad points in their day. And for me, as a mom, it was really powerful for me to pause and to ask myself how I was doing, what my highs of my day were, what my lows of my day, because so much of my focus was on others. So to have that moment at the dinner table to say, wow, okay, oh, me, what worked for me? What did I like? What was helpful? What didn't work? What was rough? And to be able to voice out loud to my family my acts of service and to be heard by them. So that the things that I was doing that seemed just like a normal part of family life, but were actually acts of service on my part to the family, could be held and seen as that. And that mattered to me too.
Yes. Yes. And I love the way you incorporate being vulnerable as with my lows, because we live in a culture that doesn't support really expressing our vulnerability. So you embedded that also in your ritual. So I really like the way that just encompasses so much more than a simple, how was your day?
Yeah. And so we really loved that. And it, I'm thinking now as we are coming up to Thanksgiving soon, and the desire for meaningful gatherings around holidays, whatever the holidays are that people celebrate. Not everybody celebrates Thanksgiving for lots of good reasons. And for me, coming together with people I love to reflect on my gratitude really feels like something I love. And so we do a go around at our Thanksgiving table where every single person has an opportunity to speak. And that came from that tradition as well, growing up, where we pose a question and whether you're 4 or 104, you have an opportunity to speak to whatever the question is. And it usually has something to do with the past year and gratitude or change, something that might be up. And I really love that. And I also love something that feels like it's part of my maternal line from you and then from your mom is setting up the scene. That sometimes part of what makes ritual work is acknowledging the time and place as separate and unique from the everyday, right? Whether that's lighting a candle at dinner that says, okay, we're marking the beginning, or if it's setting the table in a particular way, or when my kids were little and growing up for Thanksgiving, they would go out and pick leaves and different branches off trees and design the centerpiece of our Thanksgiving table so that they would be involved and incorporated. And that place of having co-creation of sacred space. It connects for me even to what you were telling us, you know, about our bedtime ritual, that there was special space that was created by your sitting down on our beds and talking just to us. And then I think about things to like with other things that come to mind are heading into, like, we celebrated Saturnalia, but we also, it looked an awful lot like Christmas. In all fairness, it looked a lot like Christmas. Yes, you called our tree a Saturnalia bush, but it looked an awful lot like a Christmas tree to everybody else. And we did stockings. And one of the things that you did that I carried on into my children as well is one at a time, in opening gifts and really showing up in presence for the presence, for lack of a, and what was your impulse with that? Where did that come from?
Sparks a memory going back to Montana when the four daughters just tore into everything and there was chaos everywhere and we never knew who gave us what. It's like, oh, I'm not doing that. We're not going to do that. I want the present has the giver embedded in it. And so what did that giver do for you? You know, what? And I wanted to pay attention. So it was partly for me. Can I see what, you know, what did my sister Joni make for you this year? Because she would always make something really special. And so, you know, that I really wanted to see that. I wanted to see that. And going back to your everybody participate, part of our Saturnalia December holiday was a piñata. And we didn't go out and buy one. We got paper bags and figured out how there's more crepe paper involved here, figured out how we were going to decorate it this year. Was it going to be a Christmas tree? And everybody came knowing they were going to get, the kids were going to get to help figure out what, not what was in the pinata, but what was the outside going to be. And everybody participated. And that's a value of inclusiveness that it looks real, like it's a thread in my life. The inclusive, wanting to include as many people with equal voice as possible, equal sharing of the time. Mm. Those are big values of mine.
Big values. And now, how are those values and this meaning making and ritual holding showing up in your life now? Now that you're not raising little kids, you're not even grandparenting little kids anymore.
No, I've evolved into an activist. I would call myself an activist. So I've been involved in community when I found a community that whose beliefs and values more closely aligned with mine. And it's been interesting. I was drawn to be the officiant at weddings. And I loved doing that. And it would help people create their own wedding ceremony so that it wasn't just whatever was in the book. It was, what do you want to say to each other on your wedding day? And it was very meaningful. Well, nowadays I don't do so many weddings. I do more memorial services, but it's the same kind of thing. What do we want? How do we want to remember this person? And in the community meetings I'm part of, the same values of egalitarian, no crosstalk, each person gets to have this, have a share of the time. So I carry that through. Everybody gets to contribute. What do you want to talk about next? And so I do include the values of egalitarianism, inclusiveness, democracy. Those are still there. And the meetings that I'm involved in, there's a peace group, WILF, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, that I'm involved in. And every meeting starts with the Raging Grannies singing two songs, and it ends with the Raging Grannies singing two songs. And you know that meeting's not over until those, and they're different songs. The only song that's really the same is the very last one. You know, when we make peace instead of war, when that one's done, the meeting's done. And so just holding, as you spoke earlier, the container, you know, holding, making the container, making things purposeful and meaningful still exists in all the meetings I run. And they're structured a lot of times. That's one thing about ritual and celebration. It's they provide kind of a structure, kind of an automatic container. Makes it easier to fill in what you want in that. And when values are clear, it's easier to do that when you have some kind of a structure. So,
well, and creating a container in meetings, which can include family dinner, is often, it structure creates that container.
Yes.
So having something that marks the beginning, having something that marks the end, having an understanding of what goes on in the middle, even if there's a structured time of just free conversation. It's like, okay, yeah, now we don't get up from the table until we do this or until it's time, and holding that container. And I do believe that having ritual structure woven throughout a family tapestry of your week, your day, your year really helps to create space for meaningful engagement.
And the weaving doesn't have to be fancy. It was never fancy, and it was simple. It came just from moments that happened, and I saw something and did something, and it wasn't well planned many times. It was just what happened in the moment, and shifting it a little bit to reflect my values and what I wanted to happen, with kind of an intuitive sense of structure and wanting some special time. I mean, I really wanted special time.
Yeah. I love that. And I'm so grateful for this time. I'm curious if you have any current resources that are favorites of yours that you would recommend people who are interested in ceremony and ritual and holding space. If you have any that you really love.
Well, my go-to one right now is The Art of Gathering by Priya Parker. And I just keep referring to that. Yesterday I was in a conversation and recommended it because it has so many of the elements of what I was doing without the understanding of what I was doing. And it's there, the container, the purpose, the values, even who's included. So that is my go-to reference right now.
Yeah. And there's a wonderful podcast with Brené Brown interviewing her that's fantastic, that I'll put a link in the show notes for people who want just a quick version of it. And the Art of Gathering is absolutely one of my go-to books right now as well on my shelf. So I love that you love it. I have it as well. It's a definitely one to listen to, read, whether it's audiobook format or paper format. It's a beautiful guide. Well, thank you so much for this time, but also for the profound influence that you had on my life in bringing ritual and ceremony and holding those containers for great, meaningful conversations that I see visible still in my life and in my children's lives. And that thread is one that I'm profoundly grateful for. So thank you so much, Mom.
It is my great honor to be here.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening and joining me in this intimate and special conversation with my mom. I hope that this episode and our conversation inspired you to find ways to incorporate easy, simple, and also meaningful rituals into your life, whether it's daily rituals or seasonal rituals or holiday rituals, things that help you and your family find meaning together throughout your lives. The first season of Transformed was a learning, growing opportunity for me, and I focused a lot on sharing with you teachers of mine, people that I have worked with and have really influenced my work. And now with season two, I'm excited to branch out beyond that to people who I am in the process of learning from right now. So yes, teachers, but also peers and folks who are inspiring me and that I believe will inspire you as well, who are living their lives and offering work that is helping people transform, deepen, ground, supporting them through challenging moments, through anxiety, through healing journeys, through parenthood. I mean, let's be serious. That's a lot of who my listeners are parents. And so I've thought about you in gathering my guest list and my topics of conversation for this season too. I'm so excited to share it with you. So please, if you want to make sure you know when season two launches, please go and subscribe to Transformed wherever you listen to podcasts so that you will know when the first episode of season two drops. Until then, I'm Britta Bushnell. Thank you so much for listening.